For those of you that were wondering as you listened to Danny's scripture reading, wisdom is a feminine noun in both the Hebrew and the Greek scriptures. So guys, sometimes we have to humble ourselves and seek higher forms of wisdom through the opposite gender. Well, there was a man who was out walking his dog on a hot summer day, and he came across an ice cream store. And he decided that, you know what, I don't want some ice cream on this hot, sticky summer day. So he took his dog and he went inside. And he approached the man at the counter and he said to him, I'd like to order some ice cream. But the guy that was working there said, I'm sorry, sir, you can't bring that dog in here. Well, the man didn't have any place to tie the dog. He wasn't anybody to give it to, so he thought quickly and said, well, this is my seeing eye dog. You can't discriminate against me. You have to let the dog come in here. So the man was served his ice cream, and as he was there eating his chocolate ice cream cone, enjoying his ice cream, another guy came in. And he too was walking his dog. And the first guy said to him, hey, they don't allow dogs in here. But if you tell the guy that's working behind the counter that it's your seeing eye dog, they'll let you keep it. Well, he took this dog up to the front register, and the man that was working there said, I'm sorry, sir, you can't bring that dog in here. He said, but this is my seeing eye dog. And he replied, you're a liar. They don't use chihuahuas as seeing eye dogs. And the man thought for a second. He said, they gave me a chihuahua? Because if he was blind, he wouldn't be able to see. Well, this joke kind of illustrates how it is that we come to know things. We know what a chihuahua looks like only because we've seen chihuahuas before. That is how the worker was able to recognize that this dog was a chihuahua. How did he know that they didn't use chihuahuas as seeing eye dogs? Well, he'd never seen one before. And how would a blind person know that they had a chihuahua rather than a Labrador retriever? They could only find out if somebody told them, or if somehow they knew that by the feel of the dog that it was a chihuahua. So we come to know things through different ways. That is how we gain wisdom. There's various routes through which we gain wisdom. And today, I think that we should explore some of these routes and ask the question, how do we come to know the things that we know? Because I believe that we as Christians are not called to reach a certain age, like 18, and just stop learning. But we are called to a lifetime of learning, a lifetime of searching, a lifetime of trying to understand who this God is that we worship, who this God is that we serve. We are called to learn and gain wisdom. So let's start today by turning to 1 Kings chapter 3. I read verses 1 through 15. Solomon made a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. He took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had been built in the name of the Lord. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father. Only he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the principal high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and said, and God said, ask what I should give you. And Solomon said, you have shown great and steadfast love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart towards you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love, and given him a son to sit upon his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in his place, in the place of my father David, although I am only a little child. I do not know how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people, so numerous they cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil. For who can govern this, your great people? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself a long life or riches, or for the life of your or for the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right. I now do according to your word. Indeed, I will give you a wise and discerning mind, like no one like you has been before, and no one like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor all your life. No other king shall compare with you. If you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your life. Then Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem, where he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. He offered a burnt offering, an offering of well-being, and provided a feast for all of his servants. Well, if we back up just a little bit from that scripture that I just read, we find that the great King David has just passed away. And as he passed away, he gave his throne to his son, Solomon, the son of David and Bathsheba. So here we start in our scripture. Solomon is new in this position. He's pretty wet behind the ears. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he goes on and he begins to do some foreign policy by marrying the Pharaoh's daughter. And then this new king, Solomon, takes his new bride and they go to the city of David. Not the city of David that we often read about in the New Testament, but the city of David is referring to the city of Jerusalem here. So Solomon takes his new bride, and they go to this city where he is trying to build a temple to the Lord, and he's trying to build a house for himself, and they're trying to build a protective wall, a barrier around the city. But since there is no temple yet, since he's still building this temple, the Israelites have no place to sacrifice. They have no place to worship. So what they do is they take their sacrifices, and they go to the high places, the places that the pagans used to worship when they lived in that area. And what they did was they would take their sacrifices, go to these old pagan places of worship, and sacrifice things to their Lord and their God. They were claiming that site as a site of worship for Yahweh, the God of Israel. So here we have Solomon, and Solomon is described as a man who loves the Lord. He is a man like his father. He follows in his father's footsteps. And he is a very pious man. He loves to please the Lord. So he too makes sacrifices to God. And he has sacrificed incense to God. And he has taken thousands of burnt offerings to this high spot in Gibeon. And this high place in Gibeon was known as the most popular pagan place of worship. So when Solomon comes into this high place in Gibeon, He offers up these thousands of burnt offerings. He is claiming that place. He's staking a claim. He's saying, I now take this once pagan altar, and I claim it for the one true God, the God of Israel, the Lord, and the Lord alone. And this pleases God. God recognizes that there's something about Solomon, that Solomon is a person after David's own heart. So God comes to Solomon in a prayer, and he says, Solomon, whatever you want, whatever you ask of me, I will give it to you. A lot of pressure there, isn't it? Well, Solomon knows that he's not equipped for the many things that he is called to do. Solomon knows that he's not going to be a good king with the limited knowledge that he has. He can't be a good husband to this new wife. He can't be a ruler over all of these numerous people because he's inexperienced. Well, Solomon starts by giving God praises. He says, thank you so much, Lord, for giving my father the things that you gave to him. Thank you for making him a wonderful king. And thank you for allowing me to inherit his throne. But God, I'm just a child. He says, I can't do this on my own. I need help. I need wisdom. Solomon recognizes that he is not equipped for the job that he is called to do. So he humbles himself, and he comes before the Lord, and he asks him for the things that he needs. And this is the first thing I want to lift out of the scripture. The first step in the process of gaining knowledge is that we must humble ourselves and admit that we don't know everything. Now this past Thursday, as Sonia and I are trying to finish up our townhouse in Harrisonburg to rent it out. We have renters coming the 1st of August. There's plenty of things to do around the house to fix it up, to get it ready. And one of the things that we're trying to do is lay some carpet. And obviously, I don't know what I'm doing, so we're hiring somebody else to lay the carpet. So I went to a carpet sales place and had some measurements and sort of wanted to get a rough idea about how much it would cost. We're just doing a laundry room, a closet, a hallway, and a stairway. So I sat down with this carpet salesman, and he started going through the numbers, trying to give me a rough estimate, and he asked about the stairs. He says, "Are there any ballasts on the stairs?" Well, to me, a ballast is something that you have in a boat, or maybe in an airplane or something. It's something that you use to balance them out so that it doesn't get lopsided and flip over. But I didn't want to look like an idiot, so I said, "Yes. Our stairs have ballast." And it didn't stop there. He said, "Well, do you have ballast on both sides?" "Yes, we do." "You have ballast the whole way up. We have 14 stairs. I said, "Yes. All 14 stairs. Okay, well, he moved on. He went on to asking other questions and punching it into his little computer. And as he came to the final step and he hit that enter key, I saw a number that I was not excited about. And that was the estimate for the installation of the carpet. Now, I went to this place because they were offering a deal, a flat rate on installation. It was like $225 for however many square foot you want to install. But the installation for this carpet was well over twice that. And I think my face shows my feeling, because I was pretty upset. I'm like, "Hey, buddy, that's over $500 for installation. You said $225. That's why I'm here." And he says, "Well, the installation fee is because you have so many ballasts on their stairway. You have 56 ballasts. And that's going to cost you extra." I'm very cheap. I'm not going to spend any extra on a ballast if I don't know what a ballast is. So I swallowed my pride and I said, "I'm sorry, sir. You're going to have to help me out here. Just what are you referring to when you talk about the ballast?" Well, on a banister, you have the spindles that connect the banister to the floor. The spindle is the name I'm used to calling it. But he referred to it as a ballast. And if they're going to put down carpet, they have to somehow go around each and every one of those, two on each step, 56 individual ballasts, or spindles. And that was going to increase our cost significantly. So it was a good thing I asked, because in our house, we have zero ballasts. So I had to swallow my pride, and I asked him. And I'm glad I did. It probably saved us a lot of money. I'd like to think that they would have eventually said, "We know you don't have any ballast here. I don't know why we're charging for that," and taking it off. But the point is, I didn't know what he was referring to. And I would have never known if I wouldn't have stopped and asked, if I wouldn't have swallowed my pride, humbled myself, and admitted, "I don't know what a ballast is." Well, Solomon, he doesn't have that same problem, does he? He doesn't have a problem with pride. He realizes that he is not well enough equipped to lead this nation, to be a great king, to be a great husband. So he asks God, when God comes to him in this dream, for wisdom. Now, by a show of hands, how many people in this congregation this morning have ever had God come to you in this way? How many people have ever had God approach you and say, "I will give you whatever you want if you just ask it"? In a dream, or even in awakening hours. Does that happen to you? Any time in your life? It's not something that happens to most people every day. And I think that's probably because God knows that we would probably ask for a new car, a new house, riches, a long life. The things that Solomon did not ask for, I would probably ask for. But God offered these things to Solomon. So the rest of us that are left without this gift of wisdom must seek wisdom in other ways. So how do we go about gaining the knowledge that we need to have to go about our everyday lives? How do we continue to grow in our knowledge and wisdom of who God is and what God is calling us to do? How God is calling us to live amongst our neighbors? Well, I can think of two good ways. And the first one I want to look at is that we gain wisdom through our experiences. As Ron shared a little bit ago for us all, he and I were at the Virginia Mennonite Conference this past Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And it's always a good time. There's so many things going on. It's more than just the delegate session where you sit through business meetings and hear random people talking about things that you really don't care about and then raising your hand to vote on them and then forgetting all about them the next day. There's workshops that go on. There's worship. There's excellent music that just goes on all this time. And something that they added a few years ago is they also have a youth time as well. Any children are welcome. There's child care provided. There's programming for these young adults and children and youth. So Friday, as we were preparing for our evening meal, I was at the very end of the line talking with some friends, and I watched as the first people came through the line with their full plates. And of course, the first people through the line are always the teenagers, right? They're the hungry ones. They always have to be in the front. Well, as they came through the line and walked by me as I stood about a quarter of a mile down the line from them at the very end, I kind of glanced at their food and I saw what I thought was Indian food. If you've ever eaten Indian food, it's a little bit of a challenge because you don't have a knife, a spoon, and a fork. But what they give you is a piece of flatbread called roti. Roti is kind of like a taco shell, a soft taco shell. And that's what you use to eat. You've got curried meat and potatoes and this pureed stuff that's almost slime that you're expected to eat with just a taco shell in your hand. You scoop it up, like in this action, and then consume it. So as we sat there watching these teenagers going through the line, and they had this piece of flatbread, and some of them were trying to eat, I think it's fun to watch people learn to eat Indian food. Because they make a mess of it. You get it all over your hands, down your sleeves, on your face. You get more on your face than in your face. Much food is dropped on the floor, on your lap, on your clothes. It's a difficult thing to eat. But as we sat there watching these youth eating the food, I could see that they were starting to get the hang of it. After a while, they learned how to maneuver their hands in order to pick up as much food as possible to consume that food. So when these people came in and they hadn't experienced Indian food before, they learned how to eat Indian food by experiencing how to eat Indian food. They learn by doing. We learn through our experiences. We come to wisdom through our experiences. But you see, Solomon, in his case, he didn't have the opportunity to learn through his experiences, did he? Sure, he could have gone about being king, not knowing what to do, and figured it out as he was going along. But that would have been really bad for the kingdom. So that's why God granted him this wisdom early on, I believe. Because the king doesn't have the opportunity to learn the same way that these children learned how to eat Indian food. Solomon didn't have the opportunity to make mistakes and learn from them. I'm sure he made some mistakes as he went along. But if he would have made some major mistakes, that would have been detrimental to the chosen people of God, to the nation of Israel. So he wasn't given this option of learning through his experiences. Unfortunately for Solomon, he also wasn't able to learn from the experiences of others. That's my second way that we come to knowledge, is through the experience of others. Now, Solomon's father was a great king, King David. He was one of the best kings ever, and he was a man after God's own heart. But he died when Solomon was too young. Remember, he refers to himself as only a child when God comes to him and asks him to maybe offer to give him whatever he wants. So Solomon didn't have a chance to become king and then come back to his father and say, "Hey, Dad, I've got this problem where these two women are claiming the same baby. What should I do about it?" He didn't have that opportunity because the only king that was still alive was himself. Now, it was Mark Twain that once said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years." There is a lot of wisdom that we can gain from our elders, isn't there? They say that those that don't learn from the past are bound to repeat it. So we can either make the same mistake that our parents made or our elders made, do the same things over again and continue to fail in that same cycle that they did, or we can learn from the mistakes of our elders, and we can learn from their successes, and we can continue to build off of their successes, continue to grow in knowledge and grow in wisdom. We can either ignore the things that have happened before us, or we can learn and gain wisdom from other people's experiences as well. I think back to those young 18-year-olds as they sat there and tried to eat food that they were not familiar with. And I wondered how much food would have been wasted if they had somebody else there to show them how to eat that food. What if there would have been some Indian food aficionado or someone from Bali that could show them how to use roti to scoop up various foods? It would have saved them a lot of hassle. They could have learned from someone with more experience. So as I was standing there in line, I stood with Jason Gerlach, who is the conference youth pastor and also a youth pastor at Community Mennonite Church. And we talked about how it would be helpful if someone could just show these children how to eat this food. And he started telling me about this discipleship and mentoring program that they have at Community Mennonite Church. He said when somebody enters into the sixth grade, that each youth is paired with an adult. And then they meet several times throughout the month in a discipleship, mentoring kind of relationship. They can go to this adult with questions that they don't want to approach their parents with. They can seek wisdom from this other person and build from their experiences and make decisions in their own lives. Jason told me that they have 50 mentees and 50 mentors in that congregation. I think that's pretty impressive. That's 50 Timothys and 50 Pauls. And it's been said that every Christian needs to have a Paul, and every Christian needs to have a Timothy. Now, Timothy and Paul are one of the most famous mentoring relationships that we find in the Bible. Timothy was a very young person, and Paul was this older, well-experienced person. And Timothy and Paul were paired up somehow, perhaps by the divine grace of God. And Paul was able to teach Timothy the ways of God, the ways of Jesus Christ throughout their lives. They frequently wrote letters back and forth, and we have two of those letters in our Bibles today. Every Christian should have that kind of relationship with someone. We should all have a relationship with someone that has less experience in the Christian faith than we do. And we should have that kind of relationship with someone who has more experience than we do. Every Christian should have a Timothy, and every Christian should have a Paul. Now, we often think about mentoring as something that you do with young children through maybe high school age, on into college, but also to kind of cut off those relationships when you reach 18, 20, 22. But it's not when we stop needing help, is it? Sometimes we need more help as we get older. Life was so simple when we were young, but as we get into our young adult ages, we really come up against some challenges in our lives. And I'm excited about some of the new... Oops, too far. Well, you're going to look at that for the rest of the time. I'm excited about one of the new programs that's starting up here in Stanton, just down the road off of Beverly. There's this program called the Jericho and Damascus Road Outreach, which is a program that takes young adults and they give them an opportunity to work, or they will be giving them an opportunity to work in a restaurant where they can learn personal skills, people skills, job skills, life skills. There's going to be a chance for education in that restaurant. A chance to learn how to be a part of the community, to be an important part that helps to build up the community rather than tear it down. This is a program that is designed for ex-offenders, people that are coming out of jail. Somebody realized that, you know what, the system isn't working. And when we put people in jail, they just come out a few years later, and they can't re-enter into society. They can't function, because all they know is the streets. They can't get a job because nobody wants to hire an ex-offender, an ex-convict. They can't socially interact with people because they've been stuck in a jail cell for the last number of years. So the people at the Jericho and Damascus Road have seen this and they said, you know what? We need to do something about it. Let's help these people reorient themselves to life outside. Let's give them a job. Let's give them training both spiritually and intellectually. Let's teach them the way that they should go. These people are being Paul to the Timothy. But it goes both ways. I'm sure they will learn as well from the ex-offenders as they share their stories with one another. And this reminds me of this past Friday. As I was walking into one of the worship sessions at the Virginia Mennonite Conference, I came up to my old professor, and I use the word old on purpose, my old professor, Jim Engel. He's old, and then he's experienced. He's been around the block a few times. He knows the way of the world. He's an intelligent man. So I came up to Jim, and he said, "Hi, we make some small talk, exchange pleasantries," and he asked me about you folks. He says, "How's the church going?" And I told Jim, "You know what, Jim, I'm just working on a sermon right now, and you probably appreciate it, because it comes from the Old Testament." And Jim is an Old Testament scholar. That's his cup of tea. He loves to hear that people are drawing from the Old Testament, because sometimes we move too quickly to the New Testament and forget about this life-giving stuff that we can find in the Old. And I told Jim about how I'm talking about the gift that Solomon was given for humbling himself and coming to God and saying, "God, I need wisdom." And I told Jim that I'm trying to wrestle with this idea that we come to wisdom through the experiences that we have in our own lives and the experiences that others have as well. And then Jim said something that caught me off guard. Jim said, "Kevin, I want to thank you for everything you've taught me over the last 3 years." Well, Jim's not just young. He's very much contemplating retirement. So I thought maybe he was just a little confused. Like, you know that you were the professor and I was the student, right, Jim? He said, "Kevin, the only difference between your side of the desk and my side of the desk is that they pay me to sit on my side." I think that's a little bit of an oversimplification. There's much difference between the two positions that we held there in the seminary. But what Jim was trying to say was something that I figured out a long time ago, but yet I failed to implement in my daily life as much as I should. What Jim was saying is that you can learn from everyone. There's not a person alive that you can't learn from. Everybody that you come in contact with, you can gain something from that person. You can gain knowledge, you can gain wisdom from them. So here was this man with a PhD that had done archaeological digs in the Middle East, who had served as a missionary teaching Bible in Ethiopia. Bilingual, trilingual, I don't know how many languages he would speak. This well-respected scholar. He's actually doing our Sunday school quarterly in two quarters. We'll have something that he put out. Here was this man telling me that he learned something from me. And I would guess that he would say that he learned something from every student that came through his classroom. And I respect that. I respect that a lot. We can learn from anybody we come in contact with. Young or old, male or female, rich or poor, there's not anybody that we can't learn something from. Now Solomon, when God came to him in his dream, Solomon asked for wisdom, and God granted that to him. Solomon was given the gift of wisdom. But for the rest of us, we have to work for it. We might be gifted in many other ways. We might be gifted with more knowledge than other people, but there's not a one of us that is going to just be given the knowledge that Solomon was given. But I think that we need to continue to work to gain wisdom and knowledge, because we need to continue to understand who God is and what God is calling us to do. We can't simply sit back and say our education is done, because if we stop learning now, if we say we know it all, then we have stopped learning. We must humble ourselves to admit that there are things that we do not know if we want to gain knowledge and wisdom. And I think that one of the best ways that we can gain wisdom is by experiencing new things, trying new things, learning new things. But perhaps the most effective way that we can learn is by learning from others. People that have more experience than ourselves. People that are perhaps wiser, or have done things that we wish to do, or learn things that we wish to learn. And we can learn from everyone. Anyone we come in contact with. So today I want to encourage you to do just that. Learn through your experiences. Learn through the experiences of others. Be willing to be a Paul and be willing to be a Timothy. Learn from everyone you come in contact with and teach everyone who will listen to the things that you say and the things you do. Be a teacher just like Paul and use words even if they're only when they're necessary, especially when they're necessary. Will you please join me in prayer? Our gracious and loving God, you have given the gift of wisdom to so many people. And perhaps no one has received this gift in such the same way